This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we're live.
Yay, Mazel Tov.
Martin, we are live. Mazel Tov is right. So welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. I'm Mel Rosenberg, your host, and I'm here with a spectacular author who I'm really honored to meet and to interview. Well, meet, you know, I'm in Israel and you're in somewhere in Brooklyn. Are you in Brooklyn?
No, I'm in Florida right now.
Ah, okay, but you...
I left Brooklyn.
You brought your accent to Florida.
South Florida, everybody speaks like this, so it's like South Brooklyn.
Okay. So I'm here with Martin Lemelman, and we are celebrating, Mazel Tov, your wonderful new graphic book for kids, which is called The Miracle Seed. We both know that the illustrated children books are miracles. So show us your miracle. And I'm going to tell the people that are listening to the podcast to run out and buy this book, The Miracle Seed, published by Martin Lemelman, who is the author and the illustrator, recently published. Recently means just 2 months ago by Erdmans. And wonderful to have you. Wonderful to have you here, Martin.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
So before we start, show us a few pages of your lovely, lovely book.
Okay. What intrigued me about this story is it goes back thousands of years, but it also brings it back into the present, where the Judean date palm was resurrected from reborn from extinction. A date palm and a date fruit that was not tasted for 1,000 years was tasted again. So to me, that was a true miracle. And in terms of the history of the Jewish people, it was even more of a miracle. It's almost like a parallel to how the Romans destroyed the temple, which is in the book. To the rebirth of Israel, to the thriving of Israel and the date palm.
Okay, and essentially, the story is based on a true scientific story, and it's incredible. So your story starts 2,000 years ago, picks up in recent modern day Israel, and it's incredible. But let's first of all talk about you a little bit. Let's talk about your history. I think that writers and the authors and illustrators like you who have managed to publish award-winning and much-loved books as you have are miracles. So let's talk about the miracle of Martin Lemelman Then we'll talk about the miracle of the dates.
Well, let me just, I think one of the interesting things in terms of becoming an artist, I mean, I think I was an artist before I was a writer, was I lived, my parents were Holocaust survivors, and we lived in back of a, I lived in back of a candy store in Brooklyn, New York, in the Brownsville section of Brooklyn. And one of the things that I was not allowed to do was to play with some of the toys that they, my parents were trying to sell. But this, so I wouldn't ruin it, so I couldn't sell them. I mean, I could eat anything I wanted. But
hold on. So just to be very clear, you lived in the candy store that was your parents' candy store.
Right, right. My parents' candy store. We lived in a three rooms in the back of my parents' candy store with Schreier. You know what Schreier is in Yiddish? It's merchandise. Okay, so.
Schreier.
Yeah. Schreier. So yeah. It was like boxes of cardboard with all the stuff and the toys and the candy and everything. So even today, 70 years, 65 years later, when I smell cardboard, it brings me back to those times because that's what my back of the candy store smelled like. So in any case, I was not allowed to play with the real toys that they were selling, but my parents bought this candy store, and it was on the bones of a candy store from the 1930s. And in that candy store, there were like shelves underneath covered drawers that had old stuff that my parents couldn't sell. And in those shelves were dried up paints. Okay, they were tempera paints and old paint by number set paints, you know, those kind of things. And I didn't know any what, you know, the difference between this kind of paint and that kind of paint. So I got some typing paper and I started, and some cardboard, and I started painting. And it was like magic. It was, you know, probably when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And that was an amazing thing to me. And that's how I started really thinking about being an artist. It was, would take me into another world. My mother never was very happy with me doing that. She always wanted me to do good in school. And I did really well in school. I really was a great student, but she couldn't understand the painting. But one of her advice that I take till this day is she would say, Mata, don't finish.
Okay, we're going to have to wait for Martin to come back in. In the meantime, I'll tell you that it's difficult to be connected to South Florida these days. And I don't even know why, but we're going to wait a second for Martin Lemelman to come back and tell us about his miracle and the miracle seed. So, Martin, welcome back to the interview.
I'm really sorry. I don't know.
Life is fair in Florida.
Okay. I'm really sorry. I apologize. I don't know what's going on.
It's okay. I told a joke while you were gone.
Okay, good. Okay.
No, I didn't, but I'll think of something if it happens again.
I'll tell some jokes.
I should have a list of jokes. No, okay. you tell a joke if I fall off the radar.
Okay.
So we were talking about the miracle of the hidden, the long lost.
The paints. And so my mother said to me, Matel, if you're going to do paintings, don't finish. And I would do 6 paintings in a day. And so she would say, don't do 6 in a day. Take your time on one. And so until this day, I never finish something in one day. It's always like I'll do something and I'll leave something for tomorrow. And sometimes it takes me 2.5 years to do something. So that's what happened with the miracle seed. It took me 2.5 years to do this book. So,
and you're also second generation Holocaust survivor.
Yes, I am. Yes.
So a few words about that. You've also written about it extensively.
Yes, I My mother and father were Holocaust survivors. I never got my father's story so much. I mean, he did join the Russian army. I know that. But my mother's story, I know extensively. And I have a, if you want to hear a story about how I got her story, there were, in the candy store, we didn't have much decoration in the back.
Now, you know, maybe we should have this about the candy store and then I'll talk to you next week. This candy store is never ending.
Okay, so
yeah, I... No, Martha, I shouldn't be the one giving you ideas for books.
Okay, but, no, I do actually did a book on that, actually.
You have a book on the candy store on Martha?
Yes,
candy.
I do, yes.
Okay,
yes,
great. I need to see that,
Okay, yeah, that's... Yeah, but in I'll make it short then. Okay, I'll make short. Okay, so in any case, there were three needleworks in the candy in the back of the candy store, and that was the only thing on our walls. It was a peacock, a horse, and a house. The only thing I knew about it was made by my Baba Malka, my grandmother Malka. But my mother would never tell me about what happened. I knew she was a Holocaust survivor. It's, you know, it's in the DNA. You know it, but you don't know anything about it. So let's fast forward to like 1989. And I'm living in Allentown I was a professor in illustration and graphic design. And my mother's living in Far Rockaway, New York, and she's my father had passed away, and she calls me up, and I say, "How are you doing?" And she said, "Okay." And well, then she says, "Not so okay. I hurt my foot." And I said, "How'd you hurt your foot?" And she said, "Well, I was making a chicken for Shabbos, and the frozen chicken fell on my foot." So I said, and so how is it? And she said, it's okay. It hurts a little. So then I told my wife this story and she said, you better go and pick up your mother. And so I went to pick up my mother and she did have a broken foot. And in Allentown, the doctor said she had to keep off her foot for about 6 weeks. And my mother never kept off her feet. When she was at our house, she would sweep and cook and clean and everything. And so I was yelling at her, you have to keep off your feet. And so how do you feel? It's like Jewish guilt. I'm screaming at a little old lady. I'm screaming at a Holocaust survivor. And I felt bad. So then I got this idea. And I said, Ma, now is the time for you to tell me the story about your life, not only about how you survived the Holocaust, but what was your life before? You know, what was your family? Because I didn't know the family at all. And so she said, no, who needs to know this? So I said, I need to know this. My brother, your son, Bernard, my brother needs to know this. Your grandchildren, well, not your grandchildren need to know this. And so I gave her a little Jewish guilt too. And so then she said, okay, I'll do it. And I got a video camera out, the big VCR cameras. And she looked at it and she said, vet is verstehen Yiddish? Will it understand Yiddish? So I said, Ma, vet verstehen Yiddish? It'll understand Yiddish. And so that's how I got her story. And I had this,
So it was from interviewing in Yiddish?
She said, no, if I'm in English. And so she started speaking in English, but when she started to, and in the beginning, when she's talking about her life before the Holocaust, it was in English, in broken English. But when she started talking about the Holocaust, she couldn't, she started speaking in Yiddish, yeah. Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah,
and you have these tapes somewhere?
Yes, I do. Yeah, and that's the basis of actually my first graphic memoir, Mendel's Daughter. Yes,
which won awards.
Yes, it won awards. It was
translated into other languages.
Yes, in Polish, surprisingly, and French and Spanish. Yes.
So, so you are now, I'm going back now to the child, Martin the child, who...
my wife still thinks I'm a child, but yes, yes.
Well, I don't know whether you've listened to any of my video or podcasts, but I believe that we write to the age that we're stuck at.
Right, I think you're right.
So I write for 5 and 6 year olds, and I know that I'm stuck there.
Yes.
And the Miracle Seed is written for 7, 8 year olds. So I'm guessing that that's where you're stuck.
Yeah, well, the Miracle Seed is 7 to 14 years old. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so keep going. Don't let me stop you.
Okay, where do you want me to be? You know, for 35 years. I could just keep speaking. And my wife says, why do you keep lecturing? They said, that's the nature of the beast. You know, after a while you start, was it mental shilshul, you know?
mental diarrhea.
Right.
Well, you're also talking to a professor, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Right.
You're doing a great job, you know, because some interviewees don't stop for air and you do. So it's perfect.
Okay.
You're doing really well. I really would like just to come over and give you a great big hug, and I might do someday. Here you're a kid and you love to draw, and they didn't tell you should go to law school or study medicine.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was the valedictorian in my school, and it was a yeshiva in high school. And when I told my friend, first of all, I couldn't tell my teachers, it was the yeshiva, that I wanted to go for art. And I went to Brooklyn College in the daytime. In my yeshiva, nobody went to school in the daytime. You went nighttime and you learned in the day. So I didn't tell them, but when I would tell my friends, I was going to go for art, they would put their arm around, one guy would put his arm around me, I remember, and said, it's like I lost my mind. And so I never got, you know, we never had art in school until I got into college. And so that was kind of an interesting experience for me. But it's something I wanted to do. And it's interesting, as you said, they wanted me to be a doctor, like every Jewish mother. And even there was a time, I remember it clearly, in 1982, I was an assistant professor at a college. I was illustrating, I had illustrated for Esquire magazine, and I was doing, that was one of my first illustrations. And I had done work for, I was doing work fairly regularly for Sesame Street magazine. And my father says to me in Yiddish, okay, now that, you've come to this time, stop all this nonsense. I was an assistant professor. I will pay for pharmacy school. This is not a lie. So it was like, and he never acknowledged that this could be something of a career as being an artist, an illustrator. So he never understood it. And, I reconcile with that. My mother, on the other hand, also was not very happy with it. But one time, a couple of years later, I was speaking at a group. It might've been like a Hadassah group. I don't even remember, at a JCC or something. And she was visiting at the time and she listened to my PowerPoint presentation about some of the things I was doing. And she said, Matel, I didn't know you did that stuff. That's really wonderful. So I said, yeah, thank you. This was when I was in my 40s or something, you know. So very interesting. Very interesting.
But it's good as eternal kids to have this reconciliation at some stage with our parents.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
were you able to reconcile with your dad?
There wasn't that a question of reconciliation. I mean, it was like, that's the way it is. It is what it is, you know. It's, you know, what can you do? You always, everybody wants, praise from their parent. I mean, You know, my children, I say something 40 years ago, they say, you said that to me. And I said, did I really say that to you? And I said, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. You know, so everybody wants praise you know, but you learn, you grow. So
my son, Martin, he could have been such a doctor.
Right.
He had such great marks in school.
Yes.
What does he do?
Well, let me tell you about that. I was really good, but my mother, I would get 98s on a test. And so what would she say to me?
What happened to the other two marks?
That's 100% what she would say to me. Why didn't you get 100%? It's not like, whoa, this kid is nice, smart.
I was worse than you because my parents didn't even have to say that.
Oh, really? Why?
This interview is about you. So you had the seichel, you had the good sense to study art in college, or?
Yeah, I studied art in college.
And you got accepted?
Yes. And the problem with that is I was actually in a new talent show when I was like right at my senior year in college on Madison Avenue in New York City. And I got nicely reviewed in like the Village Voice and some other art news. And I sold a piece, and then I said, I don't want to give this away. And so I didn't sell it. And it was like, what? You're not, you know, so it was like, what do I do? I do a painting. I want to make money on it, but I don't want to get rid of it. So that's really it's a horrible way to make a living, you know. And I won't bore you with the details, but I have a story where somebody recommended I become an illustrator. I didn't know what it was. I mean, everybody knows Norman Rockwell, but I didn't know what an illustrator was. And so I put together a portfolio of black and white pieces. And they said, go and show your pieces to the art directors. I said, okay, I didn't know. And I did, and I got some work. I didn't know what I was doing, but I got some work.
So and you got to keep the originals afterwards.
I got to keep my stuff. So this was like really something. That's really something. And it actually was good at some point. I did this book called The Tattoo Torah. And it was a book I did in 1994. And so recently, one of my latest projects from 2018 came out, I think, in 2019. They wanted to make a movie out of it with Ed Asner being the narrator. And the director called me up and, do you have the originals? And I said, yes, I do. I have all the originals. And so that was the beginning of, and I did another 100 paintings, like over 100 paintings for that. But the originals were there, and they used the originals in the movie as well. So it was good that, because when the tattoo tour came out in the beginning, there were a couple of people who wanted to buy originals. And I said, no, I don't really want to sell them. So that was a kind of, serendipity. So.
And how did you, so you've been illustrating for decades.
Yes.
And how did you break into becoming an author? Briefly, because we want to go back to the miracle seed.
Yes, I broke
in. I'm having too much fun. We can go on for hours.
Yeah, no, it's, it was with my mother's story. Okay. It was like, I was reaching an age where I need, I was doing illustrations, but I decided I don't need, everybody needs the money, but I thought I need to do something for myself, told alone. And so, and I needed to tell this story. And I did it not so much that initially to tell, you know, to get it published. I really did do it for my children, did the Mendel's daughter for my children. And I didn't know how to do something like this, but I decided that I would give it a shot. And the impetus of that is I had classes in illustration at Kutztown University, where I was teaching in Pennsylvania. And I told my students about it. And every once in a while, they would say, Mr. Lemelman, how's your book coming? And so it would give me, you know, it was such a gargantuan task for me. But because I had this, you know, guilt is a very good thing for me. And it was like, oh no, I have to do this because they keep asking me and I have to do it because they're, you know, they're interested and I can't let them down. And so I did the book that way. And again, I didn't anticipate it being published, but-
How did that happen?
It happened more easily than I thought. I sent out the book to a number of agents, and usually they say wait six or eight weeks or nothing will happen. Within a week, I had two agents calling me for the book, to be an agent for the book. And I picked one of them, and the book was sold fairly quickly after that.
That is the same agent you have today?
No, it's a different agent. Yeah, for that.
So look.
But the I had was not a children's book agent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but you do realize the chance of agents coming back to you with a first book is like one in a zillion.
Yeah, and no, that's why it threw me for a loop. You know,
one in several thousand, really, for a novice author.
I went to interview my agents, which was like, oh my God, what is going on here? So,
so that was your introduction into the
right.
world of authorship.
With everything I do, I don't know how to do anything. So somehow I plopple through it, you know. So that's what
happened. What verb did you use? You plopple through it?
Yeah.
Is that a word in English?
Yes, it's a Yinglish word. A Yinglish.
Plopple. So I just plopple through things.
Yes.
I've been in Israel.
You're allowed to use it. I'm allowing you to use it. Right.
Okay, and everybody's listening.
Right.
So Martin, let's plopple on here and get to your wonderful new miracle book, The Miracle Seed.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? Tell us about the seed.
To me, that was an amazing thing. I had finished the Tattoo Torah, and I was reading an article, and I don't remember if it was in the National Geographic or the New York Times or someplace, about these scientists who found a seed on... Yigal Yadin had unearthed all these things on Metzada, and there was, and I had read his book originally like 25 years ago, I mean, or 30 years ago, which was fascinating. So I knew the story of the excavation of Metzada by Yigal Yadin.
One second. For our listeners and viewers who don't know the story, Masada is this desert fortress originally built by King Herod, where it was the last stand of the Jews against the Romans. Yigal Yadin was the chief archaeologist who uncovered many things, including...
Yes. Yes,
and so they found those seeds back in the '60s or something.
They found the seeds in the '60s, and so they found different things. Okay, they found thousands of coins, and they found. I have it in the book here. They found clothing, and they found. Let me just take this away here. They found weapons, and they found scrolls, and they found oil lamps. And they also found a jar with six date palm seeds, Judean date palm seeds. So that then they took those seeds and they put them in a drawer someplace at a university in Tel Aviv and forgot about them for 40 years. Okay, so they were just kind of forgotten about.
Now that's if it's Tel Aviv University, then that's the par for the course, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Bar Ilan University.
Ah, Bar Ilan, same.
Yes, okay. So it was in Bar Ilan University, and then Dr. Sarah Salone, who worked at the Hadassah Hospital, who was a scientist there. And she was interested in studying ancient cures and stuff. And so she decided, she heard that the Judean date palm was known for A, its sweetness, and B, it could cure diseases. And she was doing, studies on other things, ancient cures. So she decided, well, why don't I give it a try and see if we can get something out of it? And she went and looked, and she had found these seeds. She got the Israel Archaeological Authority to let her have some of the seeds. And she gave them to Dr. Elaine Soloway. And she said, could you make these grow? And Dr. Soloway said, it's like, how do you make something 2,000 years old grow? If you know the type, what makes up a seed is made up of three parts, okay? And I try to do this in the book so it's clear to children. And also I've been getting it from adults. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know they made it interesting and also simple. And that was my goal in this book, to make something not only instructional, but inspirational in a way. And so the seed is the seed covering that protects the seed, then's the embryo of the seed where it'll grow, and then there's the food. And of course, after 2,000 years, the expiration date on the food is pretty old, is gone. But she actually, through doing bathing it in seaweed and doing all sorts of things, she actually made a seed grow, okay? And that was, the first seed was Methuselah. And that was the beginning of this extinct Judean date palm coming back and getting reborn after it.
Methuselah, according to the Gershwins, lived 900 years.
Right.
I think exactly. He lived 969 or something. I can't remember.
Right. Yeah, I don't remember.
And this date seed lasted almost 2,000 years.
Right, exactly. Yes.
And she succeeded in germinating it. And to make a long story short, because I want to talk a little bit about the book. You're supposed to continue now. To make a long story short.
She did it, but the thing was, it started to grow, and one of the things is it started to grow, then it started to die again. So that, in terms of the idea of being creative is not only about being creative as an artist or writer. I think it's creativity is in all fields, and that's the exciting thing. And so Dr. Soloway was very creative, and she tried to figure out how do we make it live again, because it's the leaves are yellowing and stuff. And she figured out that the water that they were using in the Arab Institute was like agricultural water, and it was too alkaline. And so they used a different kind of water. And then Methuselah started to grow beautifully. At the time when they did it, they didn't have like DNA that we have now. So they didn't know if it was a male or a female. So it came to be, it started to flower. It had an efflorescence, which is the flower. And they realized Methuselah is a boy. And so-
It's a boy. It's you, a have boy. To, you have to have a bris.
Yes, I know. But
we have to find a bride for Methuselah.
I know, that's the thing. I did not know, and you learn these things as you do the research, is a lot of trees don't need male and female trees. An apple tree, I don't think, needs a male and female, but a date palm needs a male and female. And so I had ended the book, a couple of years ago. And I said, well, it has pollinated. The pollen is good because the pollen has been shared with other places in the world. And even in the Arab countries, we're using its pollen to pollinate. But there wasn't a Judean date palm generation that could pollinate and create pure Judean date palm dates. And so I had ended the book that way, with hopefully one day there will be date palm. And then I read and I talked to email Dr. Soloway, and said, yeah, we have Hannah, another date palm that's even older than Methuselah by a little bit. It was found in a cave, I think near Jericho, and they grew it, and it's growing well, and it flowered, and they pollinated it by hand, and mazel tov, there are dates. And I think the first—
Martha, maybe this is where the original word of going on a date comes from.
That's right. Yeah, I gotten you. Yeah. Oh, right.
Sorry. they had a date. They had a date. And they from this date, miraculously, right, was born.
And they had the first harvest was 111 dates. And the two scientists, Dr. Soloway and Dr. Salon, tasted the date. And it was sweet and nutty. And it was tasted for the first time in 1,000 years. So to me, that is a miracle. It's a miracle, and it's a story about hope also. And I think that
hold on a second. Almost 2,000 years, no?
Well, the seed itself was in Masada 2,000 years ago. 1,000 years after that, they're not sure how the date palm was totally extinct. The Romans destroyed a lot of the date palms and the things, but they're not sure whether it was when the Crusades came and they also destroyed it, or whether it was global warming at the time. So they're not sure why, but
at least 1,000 years since it had been on a date.
1,000 years since.
Imagine going 1,000 years without having a date.
I know. It's it caused a lot of anxiety. Yes.
So you have turned this miracle seed into a miracle story.
Right.
And you have at some stage you found a wonderful agent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anna Olswanger, very good agent, really very helpful, very a great person to work with. Yes.
And she sold it to Erdmans?
Yes. And they've been really nice and wonderful people to work with. Kathleen Mertz, who is the editor, is a great editor, and Holly Hoover is a really wonderful art director, and she helped me with stuff, you know, as well.
So as somebody who writes but doesn't illustrate, this is a very intricate book, and yes, so many illustrations on each page, and so much art research to be done. What happens when you're in the middle of it? Can you say, what happens if this doesn't get picked up?
It doesn't matter to me. Okay. When I do something, I don't do it because I want it to be published. I do it because I'm dedicated to it and interested in it. And I said, the essence of it is what I like, the idea of writing. And just when I was a little kid and painting, I wasn't thinking I'm going to put it on a wall someplace. I just wanted to do the thing. And just to tell you some of the things, going to a yeshiva is very essence in the way I do my illustrations and writing, and actually the way I taught stuff, because I want an illustration not only to illustrate the words, but to enhance the words in some way. And let me show you what I mean by that. Here it's after the defeat of the Rome, I'm just going to read it to you and just look at that picture there. After the defeat by the Romans, the Jewish people were scattered throughout the world. They lived in every country, a people with no land to call their own. They endured terrible trials, yet through it all, they survived. And so on this page, I have the Arch of Titus, where they sacked the temple in Jerusalem. And on that same page, I have the Jewish people becoming their own menorah. And so it's not only illustrating the words, but adding, enhancing the words. And a lot of the things, and a lot of times when I tell this to people, they say, oh, I didn't see that. And in a way, it doesn't matter for me to tell for people to see it. It's important to me to do that, okay? And one of the things also about, you know, being a yeshiva student was that in the Torah, they say every word counts. And so I don't write a lot of, flowery language. It's simple. I try to make it clear. I try to make it exciting and informational. So that's also, so I it's not really wordy, but the words and the some people ask me, do you write first or do you do the illustrations first? So first I write a draft, and then after the draft I start doing pagination. I put the writing on each page that I think, and then I start drawing. And then I change the words because of the drawing. So it's more of a dance between the writing and the art, as opposed to this is first and then I do this. It goes back and forth. I can write a sentence literally 25 times, if not more. And an illustration, I don't think I would do 25 times, but I do at least 5 or 6 times to begin with before I start the final. So, and to me, a lot of people, oh, that's really tedious. But to me, that is the excitement of the thing, to discover the essence. And again, I don't say it's perfect, but it's as perfect as I can make it. Yeah.
This has been wonderful. I'm going to say something in Yiddish, and I'm not going to translate it. The Lebanoif Dein Kopf.
Okay. Thank you.
And this has been you're a miracle seed. What's Ken Zogan?
Was Ken Zogan? Shainam Dank.
Shainam Dank to you also. So I'm really moved. You know, you've given me goosebumps during this interview, and I hope that some. When you come to taste date number 432,
right? Okay.
You'll stop by Tel Aviv and we'll grab a coffee and I can give you a great big hug.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. It's a date. Okay, thank you very much. And thank
you. Of course, it's a date.
That's right.
It's a miracle date.
Right. Thank you.
A date. So this has been a wonderful interview. At least I'm giving myself here a 98.
No. The Hasnish Svei points.
What happened to the other two?
Right.
So, Martin Lemelman, congratulations on your brand new book, The Miracle Seed, just out with Erdman. And I hope that this book also takes flower. Can you say that in English? That's not very good English. Takes flower. It flowers.
Wow.
It flowers and blooms.
Thank you.
And you win a lot of prizes. and it's translated into many, many languages, including Yiddish.
I would like to have it translated into Hebrew. That would be really an honor. I mean, I would really
Speak to me.
Okay.
Speak to me. Let's do that.
Yeah, talk to my agent.
Actually, I would love to interview your agent. So ask her. Maybe we can do both at the same time.
Okay, sure. Okay, I will tell her.
If she'll speak to somebody like me who's only an author and cannot draw a stick figure.
Okay, sure.
Martin, this has been wonderful. And I'm Mel Rosenberg. What am I? I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And I've been speaking to the wonderful, miraculous Martin Lemelman and about his life, his career, his thoughts, and his new book, The Miracle Seed, out by Erdmann. It's been wonderful.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Shane and Dank.
Thank you.
Gesund und stark. And I'll practice my Yiddish so we can have the next one in Yiddish. In Mamelotion.
I had Zebrachene Yiddish.
Zebrachene.
Yeah.
I don't get 98 for my Yiddish, that's for sure.
No, get a 50 myself. Okay, take care.
It's been wonderful. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Bye.